The Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network is brought to you by Onyx Hunt. Bringing you the best GPS mapping software directly to your smartphone or desktop, Onyx offers you the ability to see property boundaries, mark waypoints, track your location, and so much more. Visit onyxmaps.com or you can download it directly from your app store today. Save 20% off of your purchase by using the code NATION20 at checkout. That's capital N Nation followed by the number 20. Welcome to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Parker McDonald, and this is episode number 71. Today I'm talking with my buddy Joey Bell from Tennessee. He's here at the Southern Ground headquarters, and we're discussing all things turkey hunting. But what we really key in on is out-of-state hunts for the regular guy and how you can do them better and more effectively and on a pretty tight budget. So you guys stay tuned. This is the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in with us today. I have got my buddy Joey Bell, and he was here at the Southern Ground headquarters last week, and so we decided to record a podcast. And this was before turkey season actually opened, and so we're all giddy and excited. His season opens, I believe, next week. We're on the second weekend of the Alabama turkey season right now. And yeah, it's been pretty discouraging for me, honestly. On opening day, I had two opportunities and spooked a bird one of the times, the first time, and that was unfortunate. And the second time I missed, about a couple hours later, I missed one. And that was on opening day, and I've only got to hunt one other afternoon since then, and I didn't see any turkeys. It was raining and just kind of crappy weather conditions, and so it was really, it felt like a waste of time. I know it wasn't. Every minute spent in the field is worth it, but it was about an hour and a half drive for me to get to where I was going, and to not see any birds, pretty discouraging. But if I would have killed one, it would have been worth it. So it's only, you know, you're one shot away from it being not worth it to being worth it. So I always tell everybody, if you're an opportunist like I am, just go. And the worst thing that can happen is you know, you don't kill anything or you don't see anything. But if you do kill one, deer and turkeys, it's worth it. It can become worth it really fast. So I'm coming up on the second weekend, and actually my main place that I hunt opens up this weekend. So places that I've been going to this week are kind of my spot that I really try to hunt this first week before my area opens up. A lot of the WMAs are opening up this weekend for whatever reason. I know that the state has their reasoning for it, and I'm fully supportive of them, everything that they do. I know they're doing a lot of hard work trying to make sure that we have a healthy population of turkeys and that we can keep this tradition on for the future. And so I try not to question any of that stuff. There are a few questions that I do have from time to time, but most of the time there's a good answer for them. So, hopefully you guys have been out in the field and killing turkeys. Hopefully your luck has been better than mine has been this week. But I am I'm getting ready for a full weekend of turkey hunting. It's, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and maybe even Sunday if I get the opportunity. I'm gonna be trying to kill a bird. So, yeah, hopefully you guys are staying safe. It's coronavirus 2020. I call it coronacation because it's kind of felt like there hadn't been a whole ton to do. And it's really great for a turkey hunter who has property that's close by that you can hunt. And it's actually pretty nice. So I know a lot of guys are taking advantage of that. I'm not going to take up too much of your time. I do want to remind you that you can use the code SOUTHERNGROUND at checkout, all lowercase, all one word, at ScreeGear.com. And you can use that code. It'll save you 15% off of your order. And a bunch of great stuff there. This is my first turkey season using it, so I'm using a lot of their early season stuff, warm weather stuff, and it's been awesome so far. And again, you can use a code SOUTHERNGROUND at checkout, all lowercase, all one word. That's ScreeGear.com. And that's going to be about all I've got for you guys today. Stay safe out there. I definitely would recommend that you not be in groups, but what better time for a turkey hunter to get to go out and turkey hunt than right now? So take advantage of it. Be safe, you guys. Enjoy this episode with Joey Bell. Man, thanks for coming.
I'm glad to be here. We had our lunch. What was it? The Busy Bee.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about that?
Had a dough burger for the first time. It was super. It was very delicious, and it's sticking to my ribs. And I should be good till maybe till about breakfast tomorrow. So yeah. It should be good.
But so yeah. A dough burger is something from a place in Coleman called Busy Bee, and they actually like put dough, like bread, inside of the meat, mm-hmm. the ground meat, and then mm-hmm. they fry it.
Yeah, the texture is a little different. Mm-hmm. You can tell there's dough in there, but I don't know. It had the taste of a burger, and I don't know. It was delicious,
and it's crispy.
Yeah,
that's my favorite thing about it. It's like when you eat like a country fried steak sandwich, and you get that crispiness in the meat.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, except it's better.
That's right.
I love them. Some people don't like them. Some people think they're disgusting.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. This episode of Southern Ground brought to you by Busy Bee.
Yeah. Busy Bee is definitely sponsoring the smells that are probably going to happen throughout the course of this episode. But
that's
man,
just the smell is just the coronavirus leaving your body.
Yeah. So speaking about that, we're recording this episode just a little bit early for when it actually comes out. I don't know when this episode will actually air, mm-hmm. but right now we're sitting here on the March the 16th.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the peak of the coronavirus scare.
Yeah, I hope
pandemic.
It's the peak.
Yeah,
Lord,
it could,
help us if it gets worse.
If it gets worse than this, man. So I actually woke up yesterday with being sick. And now today I'm like, dude, you can probably hear it in my voice. I know Joey can see it in my face. Like I'm not well. I don't think I have the coronavirus. I told my wife, though, I was like, it'd be kind of cool to have to be the first person in the city that's got the coronavirus. That'd be kind of neat.
Maybe
right?
You'll get a plaque.
Yeah. I was like, I could figure out a way to market Southern Ground with being one of the first people in the city with coronavirus.
Southern Ground coronavirus going around.
Yeah. So I'm not feeling too hot, but I'm feeling good enough to do a podcast. And I definitely don't have the body aches, which is a good thing.
Yeah,
I'm excited though, man. I'm excited to talk about turkeys.
Yeah, I'm always down to talk about turkeys. We were talking a little bit before we started recording about I've been tuned out of deer season since beginning of November.
Right,
I know that's kind of blasphemy to all the whitetail hunters, but that's just how I'm wired. I live and breathe turkey hunting, and I look forward to it. 10 and a half months out of the year, Tennessee season opens on April 4th, and it usually ends around the middle of May. And so since the last May, I've been looking forward to turkey season, and it's finally dwindling down, and the countdown is, and, man, we're just ready to get after it.
It's about time, man. So I didn't realize y'all's season opened that early.
Yeah, it's the Saturday, I think, if I get this right, it's usually the Saturday closest to April 1st.
Okay.
And it usually closes, like I said, about the middle of May, so I think the weekend after Mother's Day, maybe, is
okay.
Usually. When it closes, I think that's right.
Yeah, so I actually purchased my Tennessee non-resident license 3 days ago,
mm-hmm.
or so. And I'm planning on coming up to Tennessee like the first week of May and hunting it on mm-hmm. and off till the end of the season there mm-hmm. in Tennessee. Because our season here ends the first weekend of May.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably won't, depending on, so it really is... A lot of things are actually pretty dependent on this coronavirus and the quarantines and mm-hmm. the crap like that. I work in a church, and mm-hmm. at lunch today, you heard we were all on conference calls and stuff, talking about plans and stuff for our season or for this whatever quarantine mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call it. We're planning on 8 weeks of not having in-person church.
Golly.
At our church, and our church is big.
Yeah.
We have three campuses, and so it's a serious thing, but Easter falls somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, and Easter's big for the church,
yeah.
And so if we go
8 weeks of that, it changes a lot, but it also mm-hmm. does a lot of it. I mean, it, I don't like it. I'm not saying that I like it, but it could potentially help turkey season a little bit for me. So that is a plus side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously my livelihood comes from the church. And so I want to be able to have church, you know, that's my career, but it could help turkey season in the long run, you know. It could give me a few more opportunities to go.
Yeah, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Yeah, it's true. It's
the
true.
Lord giveth turkey season, the Lord taketh away paychecks.
Yeah, that's... Hey, okay. If somebody told you, Joey, that you could not get paid for the rest of your life, or you could turkey hunt.
Oh, I'd turkey hunt, no doubt.
So you, I don't know if I phrased the question right.
So you're telling me I'd be broke for the rest of my life, or I could turkey hunt the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely turkey hunt.
You'd just be broke?
I'd just be broke beating turkey all the time.
Yeah. Hey, that works.
There's a cat. I don't know. Do I only get to hunt turkeys like during season, or I have to have a means to afford to turkey hunt? Yeah,
how are you gonna buy TSS without a paycheck? That's what I want to know.
I'm gonna have to start killing them with rocks, I guess.
Yeah. So Joey, you were actually on. I was looking up just now. I can't actually tell which episode it was, but you were on an episode a little less than a year ago on April the 19th last year. And we just kind of talked turkey tactics and stuff like that.
Yep.
And you actually said something in that episode that stuck with me for the rest of that season, for the remainder of that season. You talked about, I believe it was two gobblers that you'd been working, and they were down in a bottom, and you were maybe on a field edge or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought there was no way they were going to come up this steep bluff.
Yeah, I remember that now.
And sure enough, they came up that bluff.
Yeah, I remember that now. I was on the edge of a field, and the field kind of had some, you know, it was growed up on the edge of the field. So I was kind of tucked away in there. And the way that I thought these gobblers were going to come up was going to come up that edge just on the outside of where it's all grown up. And I think it was on private land, so it had been mowed. And I was like, man, that's just a nice pathway for them to just walk up here and right in front of my gun barrel. And my back was to this drainage or just a little small holler, you know, depending on where you're from in the country, I guess.
Yeah.
And down in there was just rugged. It was kind of up and down. And I was like, man, there's no way they'd just come up through there when they had this nice little walkway to come up through. But, yeah, you're exactly right. I was looking out into the field and expecting them to come up through there. And then all of a sudden, over my right shoulder, I hear and then I look over, and one of those gobblers is strutting on this little knob just right there, and he's looking at me, and then all of a sudden all of his feathers drop, and I look over to the right of him, and there's that other gobbler that was with him, and he's just sitting there at attention, just staring me down, and I'm like, well, crap, they've made me, and yeah, sure enough, and they all left, they both left, and I was like, golly, man, but that little thing right there just reinforced how much they can really pinpoint and know exactly where you're at if you keep calling to them. And I had to change things up after that.
I mean, after talking to you that day, because I've definitely made my setups, and I think typically turkeys are going to take that kind of like deer would, a path of least resistance, but every once in a while they're going to take the path that is difficult.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while they're going to do, like we talk about a lot, turkeys going to do what turkeys want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuck with me a lot because I hunt a lot of mountainous terrain here in North Alabama, and I deal with bluffs and things like that. And so I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm going to set up here. There's no way a turkey's going to come up this bluff. But then you telling that story, it's just another one of those like small nuggets. And that's really what I try to do with, especially with turkey podcasts, is provide small nuggets that are true to help people, like you did for me, remember them throughout the season as they're going in certain scenarios. Just things that they can say, yeah, turkey's not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then things that they can say, it might.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's hard to plan for things like that because you almost have to invest in, you know, the scenario where they do come up.
Right.
Come up that easy, that path of least resistance, and just know in the back of your mind that you have to prepare for if something else happens.
Yeah.
And that's part of hunting. That's just the gambles you have to make.
It is.
You said you're taking little nuggets of things or little nuggets of information from all these conversations, and that's, you know, nobody has all the answers, but collectively as a hunting or turkey hunting community, we all have some little bit of information to share.
Right.
Even if you've only hunted 1 year and you had one encounter with a turkey, you've got something to share. Yeah. Somebody else that's hunted turkeys for 50 years, they've got all kinds of information to share, but that guy that hunted that one time might still know something that the guy that's hunted 50 years doesn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. And really with turkeys, you know, anything's possible.
That's right.
we can't count anything really out of the question.
Nope.
You know, I would like to say they're not going to cross water.
Mm-hmm.
That's a typical thing, but mm-hmm. I've seen them cross water, not swim, but seen them fly across.
Seen videos of them swimming, I think.
Did you see that video that somebody posted a video? They were out on some lake. I want to say it was on the Tennessee Turkey Hunters page
mm-hmm.
on Facebook. And this bird, I'm trying to think what they said. Like, they saw a flock of birds fly across
mm-hmm.
a lake, but two of them landed short of the lake. They flew into the water, and so they went and rescued it. And this poor little hen was, like, bobbing up and down in the water trying to swim, and her feathers were just
They're getting soaked,
you know. And
she probably sink like a rock if she got saturated.
Yeah, and so he went up and grabbed her and threw her onto the bank. It was crazy. It was like, I've never seen a turkey swim.
I think, I'm pretty confident I've seen video of that. It was like a hen just, I don't know, she was just kind of floating on top of the water. I don't know if she had just gotten there or what, but I don't know. Maybe they can swim. Like, we were talking at lunch about, you know, hunting Merriam's out in Nebraska and how I was pretty confident they could teleport because you can't keep up with them. Like, they just walk real ambly and they just kind of just, you know, hem-haw around. And then you lose sight of them. And then when you see them again, they're like 500 yards away, walking the same exact speed. And, yeah, I'm pretty confident they can just either run really fast when nobody's looking or they just teleport. I think that's the only logical
reason. Teleporting is probably the only logical explanation for it.
That's probably the most – it makes the most sense in the turkey woods. Like, that's the only thing that can happen.
I mean, I know, like, with turkeys and deer both, I've seen this where you've got eyes on them. You can see where they're going. Watching them through the trees, and then all of a sudden they don't come out the other side of a tree. They went behind a tree and then they don't come out, and you're like, where did they go? It was like they went to the, what is it on Stranger Things, the Upside Down?
Yeah, they went to the Upside Down. they're
just gone.
Dimension or something. I don't know.
It's so crazy. And normally it's going to be with big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the way it normally happens. Like, oh, I saw him for a split second, then he went behind a tree and never came out.
Yeah.
You know, it's something, the things, I mean, because I know I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how much camo I'm wearing. If you watch me walking through the woods, you're going to be able to keep eyes on me the whole time.
Me too. But it's so weird because I'm pretty confident I've seen a strutting turkey that, you know, one of those big ones that look like a dumpster with the lid open.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of walking through the woods, and then all of a sudden they disappear behind a sapling that's like 2 inches long, 2 inches wide.
It's so crazy, man. These animals, and that's, you know, that's what keeps it fun, I think. It's that if we went out there and if it were easy, I don't know that it would be fun.
You'd get burnt out on it. I get burnt out on stuff pretty easy.
Yeah.
But the one thing that's constant, man, is just wanting to go turkey hunting every spring.
Yeah.
I've, knock on wood, I haven't gotten burnt out on it yet.
Yeah.
And if that day ever comes, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
Yeah.
And I think that's one, you hear about guys that are doing the 49 state thing, and that, I think that's the coolest thing ever. But I know in my heart, the way that I am, if I tried to do that or attempted to do that, I think I'd just get burnt out on it. It would just get too much like work. So props to all those guys that can keep the focus and get that done and do that. But I enjoy taking my week. You know, I take a week off for turkey hunting every year, and just in the last couple of years I've traveled and gone somewhere to go turkey hunting. And before I just hunted around home, but, you know, I love just going to a new place every year. But I don't think I would want to try to fill, like, 10 states or something in a season or do yeah. something crazy like that. It would, I think it would just wear on me, and I don't ever want that to
I know, I'm not good going. Enough at it to be able to go to 10 states.
You ain't
got to
be good to travel.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could, but like for me, I get this way about Alabama with deer and turkeys because, you know, typically we talk about it a lot on the show, and mm-hmm. I know you know this, southern hunting is a little more difficult.
Yeah.
You know, I also firmly believe that you can't make excuses for your region that you're put in.
Mm-hmm.
You have the upper hand in the region that you were born in.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? You've been able to learn this stuff your whole life. So if you've been doing your due diligence, then you should be able to make it happen. Like, yeah. There's no reason why somebody who grew up turkey hunting in Alabama shouldn't be able to go kill turkeys in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You can't use that as a cop-out. But it is typically a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Out-of-state guys say it all the time when they travel to a place like Alabama, Mississippi for turkeys, deer.
Yeah.
I've heard more recently, just listening to several different turkey hunting podcasts,
mm-hmm.
guys talking about Alabama birds just being a different breed, like yep. even of Easterns. There's
mm-hmm.
there's like somewhere in there it's a strain that they don't gobble. And you go somewhere else, you know, and you hear the woods light up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bad day of turkey hunting in a place where turkeys are gobbling is better than some bad days that I've had in Alabama where it's just like, why am I even here? Mm-hmm. I cover 9 miles today and I haven't yeah. heard a single turkey.
Yeah, they you teleport.
Know? Yeah, they go to somewhere else. But you know, it is a little more difficult in Alabama. And so for me, you know, going to other states, I do this during deer season too. I have to have every opportunity. I have to create every opportunity mm-hmm. to be able to hunt in Alabama
mm-hmm.
because I know that it's not going to be just an easy thing for me right. to go and do. So I don't schedule just a boatload of, especially when I, like for deer, I'll schedule more out-of-state hunts early in the season because our season opens up like October, the late October, October mm-hmm. 21st or something like that.
Yeah.
That's when our deer season opens. So a lot of states are open. Georgia's open in September. Kentucky's open in September. Tennessee's open in September. A yep. lot of the states that I hunted this year, I hunted all those states before our season even opened here,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so turkeys, we're a little bit different in turkeys in that Alabama season opens up way earlier.
Earlier, yeah.
Not way earlier. Usually it would already be open. It would have opened mm-hmm. this weekend. Most
that's
of the time
they moved you back.
They moved us back a week. Mm-hmm. And, but the place where I hunt stayed the same. It's the last weekend of March
mm-hmm.
and it's the zone that I'm in. And so I'm hunting some private land starting next weekend or this upcoming weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be hunting some private land I have permission on that's in the zone that opens up this weekend. But, like I'm going to plan more of my out of state trips after our season's over. So like Tennessee,
okay.
I'll be going to Tennessee a lot once our season ends
mm-hmm.
here. But I know that if I'm right in the middle of the Alabama turkey season, I'm several things. I'm not going to be tagged out.
Mm-hmm.
I probably won't. Statistically, I'm not going to tag out in Alabama. I think we get like five birds what mm-hmm. we can kill.
Yeah, y'all get a lot.
Yeah, we get a lot.
We get four.
Yeah, which is still great.
That's still a lot.
But in Tennessee, it's not unlikely that you could tag out. If you got a spot with turkeys on it,
yeah.
you could tag out on four birds.
Yeah.
Alabama, there definitely are guys who limit out.
Mm-hmm.
There's good turkey hunters in the state. I ain't one of them. I struggle. I can usually kill some, but I'm likely not going to be tagged out.
Yeah.
However, I've never had a full season of being able to hunt a piece of private land like I have mm-hmm. access to this year,
mm-hmm.
which is a big deal.
You can really hone your skills on private land. Mm-hmm. That's basically what I did. You know, I grew up on a farm and I had access to private land and we had leases for cattle and we farmed and everything else. So, you know, I was able to hone all kinds of skills on there. I could mess up, you know, without the dire consequences of, you know, hunting public land.
Yeah.
But I learned turkeys and you learned what they do and then you can apply that to almost anywhere, just, you know, turkeys being turkeys.
Yeah. Now, so you grew up, we kind of talked about this before we hit record, you grew up, well, actually, let's do this. We haven't really gave you much of an introduction. we can kind of talk about who you are, what you do. I know you work with BHA on a lot of things. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Joey Bell?
Yeah, so I am the chapter chair for the Tennessee chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We just became a chapter. Actually, it wasn't long after we did our podcast last year.
Yep.
I think it was in late May or June that we became our own chapter and separated from the Southeast chapter. But we're kind of in a slump, but we're kind of taking things slow right now because of the coronavirus stuff, and you know, we don't have any events really planned for the next few months anyway. But we're trying to keep focus on a couple of issues around. There's a couple of sand mines that are wanting to be constructed or operational next to the rivers, and kind of worried about some runoff there. And so looking into that, and a couple other things, we've been working with TWRA as far as getting more CWD samples. And so we had our BHA versus CWD contest back in the fall. And that, you know, if you harvested a deer and got it tested and you got results back, and there was a couple of different ways to enter, but you could enter to win a Tennessee hunt license for 2021. It's a lot of 20s. But so yeah, we had several entries for that, and that was cool to get. You know, that was kind of our first big thing that we had going on, and it went to a good cause. It went to helping, you know, with CWD research. So we're probably gonna do that again, and we'll have a couple other things throughout the summer. Like, I think we have one for, I think it's called Taste of Tennessee, where we're gonna try and have different wild game dishes prepared by a chef, and all the wild game will be from Tennessee, and then we'll have maybe like a foraging class and some things like that. So that'll be some cool stuff we have going on.
That'll be neat.
Yeah. But yeah, I grew up on a farm, a farm kid from Middle Tennessee, and then went to Middle Tennessee State and got a bachelor's degree in concrete industry management. Lived up in Northern Virginia in Baltimore for about 4.5 or 5 years. I was in Baltimore during the riots. So, you know, represent.
Dang, man.
So that's, I survived cool. that.
So this is nothing crazy for you, being out of toilet paper, is it?
Oh, no, man. When I lived up in Baltimore during those riots, I think it was 2015, and my office that I worked at was about 30 minutes north of there. And coming back into the city, I think it was like the day after the riots or something, we had National Guardsmen on, like, there was every street corner, especially around the police station. I rode right by it. So it was almost living in occupied territory because those guys were just everywhere. And,
yeah.
I wasn't allowed to have, like, a rifle or a pistol, you know, in the city limits of Baltimore where I live, but I was able to have my shotgun. So the same shotgun I turkey hunted with laid on my coffee table all that night, with a box of shells next to it, and it was loaded, ready to go. But
did you see anything crazy?
I personally did not. I lived next to, there's a little park in downtown Baltimore called Patterson Park. And I think it was the night of the riots or the night after, it was right around in that area. I could hear a helicopter just hovering over the park. And I lived in a townhouse, and I poked my head out the door and I looked out, and I saw this helicopter, and they were, like, yelling at somebody on the ground from the helicopter.
Dang.
So yeah, that was pretty interesting. And then you would see the occasional, I mean, Baltimore was pretty wild without the riots. So
yeah.
You'd see all kinds of mess, you know, depending on which street you went down. So, yeah. I actually had a friend that lived a couple blocks down, and I grew up with her. And her husband lived there, and they were there during the same time. And every time we get together now, they actually live back in Nashville, not far from where I live, and we get together every now and then, and we still talk about the Baltimore riots, like their old war stories.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I remember the riots like it was yesterday. You know, we had the flashbacks, helicopters flying through the air.
That's pretty crazy. You know, it's just so weird, especially, like, I've said it a lot the last week or so, like, what a time to be alive.
That's right.
You know, it's like, people are going nuts, man, and like running out of toilet paper.
I don't know what they're doing with this toilet paper. They got to be eating it.
I'm like, I think somebody somewhere in a high up position was sitting around and they were saying, we should play a joke during this coronavirus. Yeah. We should just let's see how much we can control people and think of the most random thing that the store sells and make people believe you better have this or you're going to die.
That's right.
And so now, like, my wife happened to be at a place, and we actually needed toilet paper. We got two kids, and we were running low, and she was at the store last week, and happened to be there when they brought a crate or a pallet out of toilet paper, and she got one package of it because that's all we need. We don't need a ton. And she got one pack, and there was a lady in there that grabbed like 15.
Golly,
15 packs of toilet paper. My wife paid 20. It was $19.99 for that.
Golly.
For that 24 pack of toilet paper.
That other lady got mugged on the way out.
Dude, I'm like, you going to spend that much money on toilet paper?
You can just buy printer paper.
Yeah. Like, my goodness, man. Like, that's... Anyway, I know turkey hunters don't really care about...
Yeah, they're still making shotgun shells and all kinds of turkey stuff, so we ain't got nothing to worry about.
Yep. I'm a little concerned. That's what I told you when we were eating lunch today. Like, you know, this is... It's good for a turkey hunter, you know. Mm-hmm. This is all, you know, I'm working from home most of the time right now, and some of our services have been changed around and stuff. And so, like, I'm excited, you know, as a turkey hunter that, but at the same time, it could be, like, it's just really bad. I, like, the whole time, all I'm thinking of is, man, I'm okay as long as this just doesn't affect turkey season. Like, please don't affect turkey season. And so that's where I'm at with the whole deal. Like, if it don't affect turkey season, and, you know, I'm sure if your wives are listening to this, my wife ever heard it, she won't. But if she ever heard it, like, it sounds really selfish that that's the only thing I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about our family's health or anything like that.
We're not
going to
go hungry at my house.
No, we got plenty of meat. We got plenty of everything. We're fine. I'm not concerned about it. I just don't want turkey season. I've been looking forward to this for a while, man.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it. It kind of hurts my heart, and I feel a twitch in my left arm just talking about the cancellation of turkey season, so I don't want to get into it.
They did. Somebody, Winnebago something or another, Indian reservation.
Yeah, reservation canceled their turkey season, and I'm really glad I don't hunt that thing.
Yeah. The only thing that I could see happening is like a quarantine, which I don't think is legal. Completely like a home quarantine. It can be, I think they can like recommend things, and you can't leave like your state or something like that.
Yeah, if they if they start no knocking people for, you know, not being in quarantine, that's how you get the boogaloo started right there.
Well, and the fact of the matter is that as people are listening to this episode,
oh, there's no telling what's going to happen.
There's no telling what's going to have happened by this point.
They could be sitting in their house like, yeah, these guys are full of crap. You know, they didn't know nothing, apparently.
Yeah. Or they could be like, man, we could be looking at this when this releases and be thinking to ourselves, like, we really underestimated what was going to happen during this time.
I don't ever underestimate the stupidity of people anymore.
No, that's true. That's true. So, back to turkey hunting. So, I guess. So, you lived in Baltimore for a little bit, grew up on a farm, and we were talking about it. I was telling you kind of my view on hunting public land for turkeys, deer, whatever, was always that you hunt public land if you have no other options, and that's it. And now, like, thinking about it now, it's like, man, how crazy I was back then.
Yeah, the opportunities are, and I was in the same boat, you know, growing up on a farm. I drove by public hunting to get to a farm of mine. The public hunting, I think the public hunting area I drove by was like 1,000 acres, and the farm I was hunting was 300. So I passed an extra 600 acres to go hunt my little 300. But it never crossed my mind to go hunt public land. But just like you, you know, there's so many stigmas. You get shot if you go on public land. There's all kinds of hoodlums out there. And, you know, we got a good place to hunt. And my dad, he's in his upper, he'll be 77 this year. He still thinks like that. You know, I still can't get it through him that, you know, hunting public is so much more fun than, you know, restricting yourself to just a small, quote unquote, small, private land.
Yeah.
But in the last few years, I started hunting public, and I've traveled and hunted turkeys on public land, and it's totally opened my eyes to, man, the possibilities are literally limitless.
Yeah.
There's no way you can hunt on every piece of public in America. So you're always going to have options to go hunt turkeys.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost anything. I mean, it costs your license, and if you camp out, then that's it. It costs you your license to go turkey hunting.
Yeah.
And gas, but... You know, that's nothing compared to, you know, what you would pay for like an outfitter.
I can remember thinking, because I first kind of got the bug to hunt turkeys on public or on period, hunt Easterns.
Mm-hmm.
I think I told you there was about 5 years in between when I lived in West Texas and when I actually started hunting Eastern turkeys out here. So that 5 years was kind of like, you know, I still deer hunted and mm-hmm. stuff. And I think I maybe went turkey hunting like once or twice during that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I got on a club in Georgia when I was living there. I got on a club during turkey season, and I was not able to hunt turkeys until I paid my dues, which I think I used my tax return or something like mm-hmm. that to pay those club dues.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to get on it before turkey season ended in Georgia. And then I think I had like 2 weeks left to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wasted so much time of that turkey season because I just wasn't open to the idea of hunting on public land.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got to get on a club. I've got to hurry up and do it so I can hunt the last 2 weeks of turkey season.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have been out on public that whole season.
Yeah.
Like, I had the itch to go.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go. I wanted to start learning how to kill these things
yeah.
and how to hunt them. And I just didn't go.
Yeah.
I ended up going for a little while, for a couple weeks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no telling what I could have learned.
Yeah, and it's so much fun hunting just new ground, too.
Yeah.
And I think that's what excited me so much about when I went down to Nebraska last year. It was totally different than from anything I was used to here.
Right.
You know, be it if you hunt around, I say here, you know, southeast, you know, big woods or fields or just whatever. It's just totally different out there. It's way open ground. You can see for literally miles, and you have little slivers of trees. And the place I was hunting was the Pine Ridge, you know, for the Merriams up in northwest Nebraska. It's absolutely gorgeous out there, and
yeah.
they have the buttes, the scenery alone is worth the trip out to a new place turkey hunting.
Yeah.
Especially when you get out west and cross over into like western Nebraska, Wyoming, Colorado, all that country out there, it's gorgeous.
So did we, last year, did we talk before you went on your trip?
Yeah, yeah.
I do want to talk about that because mm-hmm. I think people can learn a lot from, mm-hmm. you know, a guy who was just all like kind of out of the blue is like, I want to start hunting these things in
yep.
other states. And especially, I kind of feel like, I feel like if you want to be on the board of BHA or be mm-hmm. involved, you have to go out west every year.
Like it's kind of a, yeah, it's kind of a prerequisite.
Yeah, it's like, that's on the...
Not really, but...
It's on the interview, like, are you okay with going out west every year? But you did, you went out west and did some turkey hunts.
Yeah.
And then you're planning on doing that again this year.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of break down for us where you went and mm-hmm. what, you know, we talked about cost being minimal, you
yeah.
know, because it really is to go out of state if you're mm-hmm. going to hunt public land. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so the decision was made, it was, last year, what, I can't even remember what year it is. So it's 2020 now. We went in 2019, but the decision was made to go out there in 2018. It was going to be my bachelor party, or it was my bachelor party.
Right.
I got married in the beginning of May, and the last week of April, my buddy and I lit out and went to Nebraska. I wanted a Merriam's. For no reason other than I knew they were gorgeous birds and they lived in pretty country. And that was reason enough to go after them. So, okay, that decision was made. What's the next decision to make? Okay, where are these things at? So, the closest place to kill a Merriam's for me was western Nebraska, up in the Panhandle.
How far was that?
It took us, you know, it took us about a day and a half to get out there. And that was pretty hard driving. The first night we tried to sleep in a, I think it was a Lutheran church parking lot there in the middle of nowhere, Nebraska, and it got freaking cold out there. So we like froze to death for a few hours and didn't get any sleep. So we got up and just kept driving. So it was a day and a half of hard driving. And on the way back, we were so tired, we just got a hotel room and split it into 2 days. So we learned that. But yeah, western Nebraska, up around, there's a couple towns. There's only a couple significant towns around there. One was Shadron, another one's Crawford. And those towns are just north of what they call the Pine Ridge.
Okay.
And so that area is full of public ground, Nebraska National Forest, and I don't know how many WMAs are out there. So that's the decision of, you know, where. And then it was just my buddy and I, and we put out the word to several of my friends because it was going to be my bachelor party. Yeah. So I was going to invite anybody that would remotely want to go. But it turns out not many people wanted to take off, you know, work or be gone away from home for about 10 days going turkey hunting. so that shortened the list down to about two people. It was just me and Jacob. And so that made things a lot more simple, you know.
Yeah.
Just either finding accommodations or just dealing with two guys. So what we did, we got out there and we got us an Airbnb. And it was super cheap. I would say if you go out there by yourself, I might recommend just camping or something like that.
Yeah, truck camp.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Because you're still looking at, you know, an Airbnb, I don't know, you can pay upwards to $100 a night for some nicer places, or 50, 60, 70 bucks. So by yourself, if you're hunting for a week, it adds up.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you got at least two guys, if you got two, three, four guys and you get an Airbnb, you have a house to yourself and cost is nil. You know, you just got a place to sleep because you're not going to be at the house all day, every day.
Right.
You just need a place to sleep at night. So that was easy. And then we would just eat in town because we were gone till like 9 o'clock at night. So we didn't really have time to cook anything. So we just ate. We stayed out. What we're going to do this year is we're probably going to camp and bring our own food and do that because, you know, being it was a bachelor party last year,
yeah.
You know, we were willing to just, you know, have a house and kick back and relax. We actually didn't get up very early every morning. I think I talked about the last time I was on the podcast, you know, I love hunting middle of the day in the afternoons. Yeah. And we figured out too that there wasn't that much pressure, you know, after the morning hunt anyway. Mm-hmm. So we'd just sleep in. I mean, we got up a few mornings that we had birds roosted. And but other than that, you know, we just sleep in, get up at like 7 o'clock, eat breakfast, and then go hunting. So we were well rested,
and it worked out.
It worked out. Yeah, we had six tags, and we filled five of them in 4 days. So that was good. That was a lot of fun.
That's a pretty good trip, man. Like, that's a really good trip. That's awesome, and especially considering, you know, like kind of what you said, you weren't getting up super early. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going out there and just like, it's almost like, let's go kill a turkey today, you know?
That was our mindset. I mean, that's what we had planned to do every day.
What do you want to do today? I don't know. What time is it? Say, let's go kill a turkey.
Yeah. Let's go eat breakfast. We did make it a point to eat some awesome breakfast.
Yeah.
Go down to the Greasy Spoon and get you some fried potatoes and, you know, some hash browns and eggs and whatever, and then we'll go kill a turkey.
So we're talking about a little bit at lunch today, but it was a little bit different, right? It was a little bit different style of turkey hunting.
Yeah, and everybody that I've ever talked to that hunted Merriam's, they're like, oh man, they're the easiest things to kill. You can call them in by slapping two boards together. And I'm like, man, that's the kind of turkeys I need.
Yeah.
That's just what I want. But we get out there, and it was kind of early in the season. They have an archery season and a shotgun season, and we got there, I think, the second weekend of the shotgun season. So I guess it was kind of still early, you know, for them out there, and that they were still grouped up with a bunch of hens. So there were hens everywhere. They weren't that responsive to calling. And I just had these dreams and aspirations of seeing the big white-tipped fan come over the hill and just kind of waltz and just saunter right into the shotgun there, but that was not the case. And they were very unresponsive to calling. Had a lot of hens with them, so we basically just had to use, it's not, I don't know if you call it woodsmanship out there, they ain't got that much woods, but just
prairie ship.
Yeah, prairie ship, meadow ship. And just get in positions and almost chase down a couple turkeys just to get them in shotgun range. Just ambushing. And
you pretty much did that with one of them, right?
Yeah, we did. So the first one that I was able to kill, I'd literally chased over like some sand dunes that were in a drainage. And the flock would go over one. I would watch them. And the flock would go over one. And as soon as they got out of sight, I would sprint down the one I was on and up the next one where they just went over. And I'd just keep gaining a little ground that way, and I'd gain a little ground. And I finally ran out of ground, and they got up on the edge of this drainage and were kind of trotting away, and they were about 40 yards. The last gobbler was about 40 yards away. I said, well, it's now or never. And I just kind of eased up, and I shouldered my shotgun, and I guess that was just enough to, like, get their attention and just stop and wonder what I was. And I fired off a shot, and I got the last one. So there went that – there went my dreams of, you know, having one work in or whatever. I had to just chase it down. I ran up to that bird, and I couldn't hardly breathe because I'd been running, like, for the last half hour. And I was just sitting there trying to catch my breath. And but it was still cool, and we killed two other ones like that. Not that we had to chase them down, but just, you know, my buddy killed one, just ambushing, sitting in, like, a downed tree.
Yeah.
And some walked by him. He got out, and he was able to get out in front of them. And then some other ones, the other one we killed was a Jake. My buddy Jacob killed that one. Kind of funny. Jake killed a Jake.
Yeah.
But these birds were just kind of coming over the hill to where we were sitting. We weren't even calling. We were sitting there listening for a gobble that evening. And this flock of birds, we heard them just, you know, clucking and purring, just kind of ambling up this hill. And so we kind of just dropped down to the ground, and we're just laying on the ground. And I think it was Jacob's turn to shoot that time. And I said, well, if you shoot, I'm just going to pop up, and I'm going to try to shoot one, too, if I spot one. And he caught a glimpse of a Jake, and he killed it, and the flock just scattered. And there was a Jake that flew right past me, and I shouldn't have shot it. That's probably bad ethics. But I tried to shoot at this flying turkey, and I just totally missed. I didn't nick a feather off of him. So there went one $10 TSS shell for nothing. Yeah. But we got really what we came for on that Tuesday, and we got into a spot there that we were in the day before and saw birds. And so that Tuesday, we planned to go there again, and there was a truck there. And when we drove by, saw the truck, we looked off into the field that this truck was parked in, and way at the other end of the field, we could see like three guys coming back to the truck. And they had, we looked at them through the binoculars, they had ground blinds, and they had all kinds of stuff. It might have been some of you guys that like to film your hunts.
Yeah. They look really ridiculous coming out of the woods sometimes.
Yeah, they looked like they were refugees just coming out of the woods. They had everything, it looked like they had everything they owned on their back. But I told Jake, I was like, well, they're coming back to the truck. Let's just pull down there. We'll just hide in the bushes and wait for them to leave. So we pulled down the road, and we were watching them through binoculars, and yeah, sure enough, they loaded up and got out of there. And we just whipped right in behind them and started walking in and actually got on some goblin birds and set up. And it was textbook. That was the only goblin birds during the day that we heard. And we killed both of them. So we got really lucky. And, yeah, it was everything.
Did you kill them both in the same set? Like,
yeah, we doubled.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We were in this little clearing, and they had to come down one side of a drainage and kind of up halfway up the other side where we were sitting. And we would kind of watch them the whole way. We had a Jake decoy out, give them something to look at. And they sambled down through there. And it was the first, that was when I really realized the difference between hunting Merriam's and hunting Easterns. Because back here was the calling. I have to, like, it's really soft, and you try to be sweet, and you do more subtle calling around here than you do anything else. And so I tried that. And they almost seem uninterested. They're like, okay, whatever. I hear somebody over there talking.
Huh.
But they didn't really get into it. And so they were kind of hanging up on us. And I started just like doing a fight and purr. I had my pot call, and then I had a mouth call in my mouth. And we just started doing a fight and purr. And Jacob had a pot call with him, and he was doing a fight and purr. And I was doing a fight and purr in my mouth. And we were just making all kinds of racket. And, man, they were just hammering, and here they come. They just trotted right down that hill. And as soon as they got out of sight, we put our pot calls down, and I just got ready. And that first one came into the clearing and kind of looked at things. And as soon as I told Jacob, I said, as soon as I get a shot, I'm going to take it. And I just hope that other one just stands still long enough for you to shoot. I was being real selfish. And but sure enough, I shot that one, and he started flopping, and the other one kind of started trotting and running to the left. And Jacob shot and killed him. But we killed both of them just right there. And that was the most fun turkey hunt we'd ever been on.
That's pretty cool. So you talk about those guys that were there.
Mm-hmm.
How was the pressure in Nebraska when you were there?
So we got there Easter weekend. And oddly enough, and we had planned to get there that Friday night or that weekend sometime Easter and hunt that whole rest of the week. And we had planned on what we had in our mind was that there's going to be all kinds of people there on the weekend. You know, we'll just spend the first couple of days scouting, kind of getting the lay of the land, see where people are parked. And then when the crowd leaves Sunday night, Monday, then we can hunt the rest of the week.
Yeah.
And that's what we thought. But when we got there, there wasn't really that much pressure that weekend, which I thought was odd. So I don't know if it was Easter that kind of had things, you know, different or whatever, but we had virtually the run of the place for a couple days when we were out there. There wasn't anybody there. And then Tuesday was one of the first times we saw somebody. And that's when everybody showed up. They showed up on Tuesday. They stayed the rest of the week. And we didn't kill a bird. We didn't kill a bird there the rest of the week because there's people everywhere. I'll give that excuse. It could have been that we just sucked at turkey hunting by the end of the week and we got burnt out. But yeah, I don't know. It was weird. We had a lot of pressure during the week, and there wasn't any that weekend. It was reversed of what I would have thought.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So when you say a lot of pressure, when you say like there was a lot more in the week, how would you compare it to some of the southern states?
I mean, you know, there was pressure in that I saw a truck everywhere. I saw a truck at every piece of public that we drove by.
Yeah.
Or there was one or two trucks. Now, it's different. It was different out there because, one, there was a lot of public in a little bit of area. So you had the Nebraska National Forest, which is there. And then I know there's probably at least five WMAs within a couple hours of each other.
Yeah.
And they're sizable. And we covered a lot of ground and did a lot of driving and a lot of walking. And almost everywhere we went after that Tuesday had a truck parked in it.
Really?
Like even the places we'd been before, the places we'd killed turkeys, and man, we'd go back like that Wednesday or something, there'd be a truck there. And I'm not knocking anybody.
Yeah, sure.
I wish them all the best, but man, I just wish they'd just come the last week or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there was just people hunting out there.
Yeah.
And we just tried to deal with it. We got around some goblin birds, you know, a little bit later in the week, but just couldn't make it happen like we did the first few days.
So. Yeah, yeah. What was it like? What's the terrain like and stuff out there?
There was it's rolling hills and buttes. You know, the sandstone colored buttes are out there, so that was really cool as a backdrop, you know, of calling turkeys. They call it the Pine Ridge for a reason. There are pine trees everywhere. That was mostly what was out there. Drainages, you know, just washed out drainages, big, I call them hollers, you know, it depends on where you're from. It's either a drainage or a holler. But those are going everywhere, and it's pretty steep in places. The hills are a little easier to get up because, you know, around here you've got the rotten leaves, and it holds moisture under the ground, and it gets all muddy and mucky underneath, and it's hard to get up.
Yeah.
Those hills out there were pretty easy to get up. I mean, it was just dry and pine needles. So, I mean, they were steep, and, you know, you'd start sucking air when you get to the top of a few of them.
Yeah.
But they were just a little bit easier to get up.
That's cool. And did you find more turkeys, like, in the open areas, or were they usually hanging around pretty close to where the pines are at?
We found a lot. I think we killed all of our birds in the pines, except for the one I chased out of that drainage and killed.
Yeah.
But there were still trees there. We didn't really find out what they were eating. We finally cut open the craw of one, and they were like little yellow flowers that they were eating, because we didn't see anything. I mean, we didn't know nothing. We didn't know anything about the area much anyway, so we didn't really know what kind of food to look for out there.
Right.
All we saw laying on the ground was pine cones and pine needles. So I was told Jacob, I was like, this has got to be what they're eating. This is the only thing I'm seeing.
Yeah.
But, they hung around the trees, and that's what I keep hearing about our upcoming Oklahoma and Kansas trip this year. Like, find trees and you'll find turkeys. So I'm hoping that, you know, still takes effect there.
Yeah, so let's talk about Oklahoma and Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
You're going after Rios, mm-hmm. right? You've been hunting. We've been talking about Merriam's in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to go after a different type of bird. You're going after Rios. Those mm-hmm. are my – that's what I cut my teeth on, and it's a whole lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick those two places?
One, it was easy to drive to, and two, it was – that's about it. You know, I always hear about
two. There is no two.
Two. There is no two. Two. See number one. But no, they're just close by, and I know there are birds there. I keep hearing everybody in the world hunts Kansas, and a lot of people hunt Oklahoma, but maybe not as much. And I was looking at land access, and Kansas is full of walk-in hunting areas. Oklahoma has a lot of WMAs, and so We're going to go out there and, you know, just try our luck. We're going to stay mobile. We're not going to stay in one place. And we're going to have an Airbnb or anything like that. So, you know, the fact that we were staying mobile really opened up more for us.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have to pick a town to stick around.
Yeah.
You know, we could, if we wanted to pick up camp and go across the state one day and come back to the other end the next day, you know, that's fine. So, yeah, just the amount of the turkey populations and the amount of public land is basically what just made us decide that.
Was there anything just like out of the ordinary that made it difficult for you to find a place to hunt in Oklahoma or Kansas, just as far as regulations?
No, not really. It's pretty straightforward. The difference in Oklahoma and Kansas versus like here, you know, we have a statewide season. I say we, like Alabama and Tennessee, we've got statewide seasons. Right. I can kill four turkeys. I can kill all four turkeys in the same county on the same farm. You know, it doesn't matter. I can kill all of them there. And I guess that's the same way here in Alabama. You can kill all five of your turkeys just, you know, wherever, or do you have to do different zones or counties or whatever? But anyway, out in Oklahoma and Kansas, they have county limits. They have a state total statewide limit, but there are some counties in Oklahoma that you can only kill one bird, and there are some counties in Oklahoma you can kill two birds. So that made a difference too, and I think...
Does that mean you can kill three?
You can kill three per state, but if you kill... Like if one county has a two bird limit, like I can only kill two birds in that county with my license.
Yeah.
That go toward the state limit, and then I have to go to another county, and the other county maybe just one turkey per county.
But you can mix those and end up with a three.
Yeah.
With three birds.
Three total per the state, and Kansas is the same way, except they do units.
Okay.
They have I think it's six units in Kansas. I'm not mistaken, and there's a couple units have just gone to one bird per unit, which is, you know, they're significant portions of the state. So if you're in like the upper northeast corner of Kansas and you kill a turkey, and if it's a one bird limit, you're gonna have to go either to the middle of Kansas or you're gonna have to go south to southeast Kansas or to a whole different part of the state to kill another bird.
Yeah,
but they got a three bird they've got a three-bird season, and we're hunting in a unit that is two birds per unit. So
okay. We
don't have to just burn a tag and be done there.
So technically, y'all could both kill six.
Yeah.
If you got the opportunity to.
Best case scenario, we'll come back with 12 turkeys. But, you know, I don't have, you know, I keep realistic expectations, and you got to when you travel.
Yeah.
Because
that's
weather
something,
or something like that could come through, and you couldn't kill anything.
That's something we talked about with Zach Farinball a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
or I guess a few weeks ago now. It was our last episode of Deer Season. Talked to Zach Farinball and Aaron Warbritton from mm-hmm. Hunting Public, and I was asking Zach, you know, what were your expectations coming into Alabama to hunt deer
mm-hmm.
a couple years ago when you did, and he said, you know, I try not to create expectations, because when mm-hmm. you make expectations, you're bound to be disappointed
right.
by those expectations.
You almost have to be a pessimist. You're either always right or you're pleasantly surprised.
yeah, it's true, man. It's true, and so that's I'm the opposite, man. I'm very optimistic mm-hmm. about stuff. And, like, mm-hmm. I really, when I go into research things, like, you know, when you research stuff, most of the time, you're seeing, and you're wanting to see the people who went out and killed a limit, mm-hmm. you know, really fast. And so, you know, going into Kentucky, when I went and started deer hunting in Kentucky, you go into that with the expectation of there's going to be a big buck on every
mm-hmm.
every soybean field. And it's
yep.
just not the reality.
Yeah.
And so you get really disappointed by it. And so I understand, mm-hmm. you know, I understand that thinking, especially somebody like those guys who are traveling 100% of the time. They're they're in different states and moving all over the place and stuff. And so I think that's a lesson you can learn from guys who do that often
mm-hmm.
for guys like yourself who maybe just can do it once a year or so to go out and you know, surprise yourself. You know, it's a whole lot more fun when you go out to a spot and you're like, I didn't think I was going to kill something, but I did, you know?
Well, just like last year, you know, we had high expectations of, you know, we're going to call in birds and put on a show and they're gorgeous and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we had to crawl on her belly for a half a mile and chase turkeys over sand dunes, you know, to kill a couple of birds. So expectations going into Oklahoma are like, well, I'm going to have to crawl on my belly through all these thorn bushes and I might get rattlesnake bit.
Yeah, there's rattlesnakes. That's true. I've killed more rattlesnakes during turkey season than I've killed turkeys.
I'm glad my wife doesn't listen to this podcast because she's going to be worried about it.
Now, that was in West Texas. There was actually, I can think of a time, it was a spring turkey season. We'll have a short story time. Spring turkey season, I was probably a freshman in high school, maybe a sophomore in high school. I was hunting by myself. I started hunting by myself, I think, in 7th or 8th grade. And Dad had went to a spot, and then he may have my little sister with him. And I went to a completely different area, kind of close to a windmill, that evening. And I was sitting there, and there was a deer blind not too terribly far away from me. But I was sitting there, and flock of turkeys comes down this old Caliche road, and I'm sitting there and I shoot one and it flops, and it was awesome. Like, it was it was so much fun, man. Like, I and it's one of those, like, sitting here talking about it, it's almost like I've forgotten about how much fun that hunt was, because it was just so cool to have that happen. I wasn't, you know, I hadn't really hunted turkeys like that before, especially the spring season, and expectations were super low too. You know, we knew we'd see turkeys because we always do, but it just the whole experience of that. So I shot this bird, it flopped, I ran to it, and in Texas you get an actual, like, a physical tag, and so I had to have something to tie this tag on with, and obviously freshman in high school I didn't think to have anything on my person that was that I could tie it with. I was like, well, there's a deer blind over here, I'll run over to this deer blind and see if there's like a carpet mat or something in there or I can tear a little string off of it. So I sprint, this turkey's still flopping, and I make sure that it's, you know, not going to go anywhere. Go over to it, make sure it's good. I sprint all the way to the blind, and to this day, I don't really know why I was sprinting. Like, there was really no reason to sprint, other than I had to walk to my dad after I was done. So I'm sprinting, and I get almost to this blind, and I, in my mind, it's probably a lot different than the reality, but I was like in mid-stride in a run. And I just happened to notice this rattlesnake straight as a board in this little tiny ditch. And it was just laid out there straight. And I was like, ah, and I like held myself back. And I had left my gun up against the tree that I had been sitting under. And so I was like, oh, crap, I got to kill this thing. So I sprinted all the way back to my gun.
You did grabbed a lot my of running gun. That day.
I did. I went and shot this turkey. I mean, went and shot this rattlesnake, got the thing out of the blind, found something I could use, tagged the turkey, walked back to my dad down the road with a rattlesnake over one shoulder and a turkey in the other shoulder.
It was total Texas right
and
there.
It was, and the best part about it was I was like in like this sleeveless, like redneck camo shirt. And so the pictures are hilarious. Well, the next day, I was the same thing. I mean, it was almost the same thing that happened. I had gotten out of where I was sitting at. And was walking around and had left my gun for some stupid reason, left my gun where I was sitting at. And I take like a few steps and there's this giant rattlesnake coiled up. And it actually struck at me. I was probably just inches away from, but it was a big snake. It was like a 5.5 foot rattlesnake with like its buttons were like that, like probably like on its rattles. It was probably... I'm trying to think how big you think
about
that is.
4 inches,
4 or 5 inches, something like that, of rattles. And so I'm shaking. Like after it struck at me and started rattling like crazy, it stayed coiled up. Run back and get my gun and shot this rattlesnake. And this thing was gigantic, just big around. And sat back down, and obviously I'm like paranoid. At this point, I'm like I'm two rattlesnakes deep, two days in a row. I don't want to even be on the ground right now. I want to be, like, in an elevated position.
And you have a habit of leaving your gun somewhere.
Yeah, and I keep leaving my gun laying in places. So I ended up calling in this Jake and shot this Jake and walked back to my dad with a rattlesnake over one shoulder and a turkey in the other shoulder. And I shot two birds in 2 days and two rattlesnakes. And then I actually killed a rattlesnake later in the, like, it may have been that same day that was in the middle of the road that we were driving
on. Golly.
It was crazy, man. Rattlesnakes are like, it's a real thing out there that you really need to be concerned about.
Real.
Yeah, because, like, I don't know. I haven't had just a ton of close calls like that where mm-hmm. I like, almost stepped on them. Mm-hmm. But that couple of days right there was intense. Like, it was crazy intense.
I haven't hunted anywhere that's heavy in rattlesnakes, luckily. So I guess Oklahoma, we'll just have to be minding our P's and Q's about where we're going. And
definitely.
When we get up to Kansas, if he can still make it, Chris Jenkins, Dr. Chris Jenkins, I don't know, you may have seen his name float around the Southeast chapter, but he's going to try and meet us out in Kansas, and he's a herpetologist.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, he'll be a good guy to have around, you know, if we come across any snakes. So I'm hoping that. We don't run into them, but
so I don't know if Oklahoma has it. I'm sure they do. But we had what we called bull snakes mm-hmm. out in West Texas, and mm-hmm. they look just like a rattler. They're not venomous at all, but they look just like a rattlesnake, except they have the more oval shaped head, mm-hmm. like non venomous snakes, and they don't have rattles. Mm-hmm. But they make a noise and they wiggle their tail like they're rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
And I've caught a whole bunch of those in my life, but. They eat rattlesnakes. I don't know all the truth behind that, but that's their defense mechanism is that they really look like a diamondback rattlesnake.
Yeah, that's another thing you got to think about when you go out west or somewhere different like that. You're not only thinking about turkey hunting, you're thinking about everything else that lives there.
Yeah.
We didn't really have a problem in Nebraska when I was looking at Nebraska and doing some research to go out there. I'd heard there were cougars out there and mountain lions or whatever, but I didn't. You know, we didn't carry any sidearms or anything like that. But when you get down, like you said, into Texas or maybe into Oklahoma, we might have to start looking for rattlesnakes. And then I always thought it'd be cool to go hunt like up in Montana, Merriam's, and hunting grizzly bear country.
Yeah,
so that'd be something really cool. So I don't know. I've heard of guys in the East calling up black bears, you know, with turkey calls. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess when you're doing your homework to go somewhere, look up what other critters like to eat turkeys out there.
Yeah,
be careful.
What likes to eat turkeys and humans?
Yeah, that's right. Area. Turkey is a side dish, you know.
That's cool, man. That's going to be a fun trip. I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes for you.
Yeah, we're going to be mobile, so we're just going to keep a tent in the truck and we'll just camp out. You can camp for free at some of the WMAs out there, and there's several state parks that have free primitive camping. So we're just
you can always just sleep in a Walmart parking lot in your truck. Yeah, that's what I would do.
We can still pitch the tent, you know, and we just don't have to have stakes. And we're going to be in it. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
We could do that. But I think our plan for food this trip, we haven't really talked about it, but I've kind of thought about it a little bit, is just taking – Well, I went on my first backcountry hunt in Wyoming last year, and that was cool to pack for and, you know, like ration out your food. And I think that may be similar to what I do this trip just because it's going to be easier just to have all my food in like a bag or whatever. So it'll be like, you know, some protein bars for breakfast and like some pepperoni and cheese and tortillas and stuff like that for lunch. And then you got jerky and trail mix and stuff for snacks. And
yeah.
Maybe like dehydrated meals or something for dinner, and just go cheap, you know, go budget that way.
I was talking to, do you know who Tim Inslee is?
The name sounds familiar.
He hosts the Backcountry, not the Backcountry, the Badlands Film Festival.
Oh, no.
He's a rodeo guy, big into bow hunting, and he lives for the backcountry turkey hunt. That's what he does. Like, he loves the backcountry turkey hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a dream of mine, you know, mm-hmm. I want to go. I'd love to go on a Western turkey hunt or something mm-hmm. like that, or any kind of Western hunting trip. I've never done that mm-hmm. with the exception of being raised in West Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It's about as far west as I've ever hunted. And I think it'd be fun, man. Just you talking about it, experiencing something new. Like that's the coolest part about it. You're just going out and seeing new country.
Yeah. And then turkey hunting, you know, it's like the poor man's big game. I mean, we went to Nebraska. I think we spent $100 a tag, and we got 3 tags, and that was it. That's all we spent on that hunt versus gas and, you know, whatever little bit of stuff. But you can do it cheap, especially a turkey hunt. And then there's some states like Wisconsin, I don't know what their hunting license is, but their turkey tags are like $15 a piece.
Wow.
And you can continue to buy them. You know, you, You kill one and use that tag, you go get another one, and they'll keep selling them to you. And I think that's why Dave Owens spent about a week up there last year and killed 8 million turkeys or however many he killed up there. But
did you see that thing that Shane Simpson made? It's like how I felt Dave was doing whenever he was in...
Oh, it was the guy in the helicopter?
The guy in the helicopter.
From, was it Full Metal Jacket?
Yeah.
It's like, get some! Yeah, that's pretty accurate, man. That dude's... Man, you can't even compare him to anybody else. He's in a league of his own.
Somebody, and he's just a nice guy, too. He's somebody, humble as all get out.
Somebody need to check him for feathers.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I was talking to a guy today, and he was like, how many birds... I think he was, honestly, I had shared the video that I just dropped today of a turkey hunt from last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'd shared it to a page, and the guy said, how many birds have you killed? Mm-hmm. I think he was trying to,
he was trying to get something out of you.
Get something out of me? Yeah. Like, you ought not be making videos if you ain't no good at this or whatever. And so I told him, and he was like, well, I guess that's all right, you know? But I told him, I was like, yeah, it's okay. I mean... It's not that I'm a bad turkey hunter. I think I'm a decent turkey hunter. I just, I know where I want to be. And, like, it's so much fun. And it's, mm-hmm. I'm just a very competitive person.
Mm-hmm.
Not just with other people, but with myself. Like,
yeah.
I want to always get better, mm-hmm. you know, at whatever I'm doing. Whether it's deer or turkeys or bass fishing,
mm-hmm.
whatever. Like, if it's something that I've decided is a passion of mine, then I want to be one of the best at it. Like, that's where I see guys like Dave Owens, and I'm like, yeah, like, obviously I'm probably never going to have the means to be able to do what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
And just because of my lifestyle and what I do for a career and having a family and mm-hmm. things like that. But I want to be the guy, I want to be a guy one day that's like, now that guy really knows what he's doing, you know.
Yeah.
So I continue to say I'm not that good at it, like because I'm not, you know. Same thing with deer hunting, like I can kill some deer, but I'm not the best at it.
But you still have experiences to share, and I think that's what we talked about earlier. Even if some guys has only been turkey hunting one day of one season,
yeah,
but had encounters with turkeys and learned something that day. He still has something to share.
Yeah.
This other guy that's turkey hunted for 50 years or that's killed a turkey in 800 states all over the world, he's got something to share as well, but he's just got a lot of experiences.
And yeah.
I don't have any more experience than probably the average guy anyway, but I'll talk to you all day about turkey hunting. And I'm at when I got hooked on turkey hunting, I may have only had a few years worth of experience, and they were probably bad experience more so than not, you know, because I was learning and didn't really know what I was doing, but I enjoyed talking about it, and I still would have had something to share.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, content creators like you, regardless of the experience you have and what your past, you know, hunts were like, you still have something to share.
Yeah.
And you're just in a position to put that out there and share it with the world, just like this podcast and your YouTube channel. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Everybody's got their own experiences to share.
Yeah, I agree. And it's especially in turkey hunting mm-hmm. because it is so different from turkey to turkey.
Yeah.
Like from – I feel like I can assume more on deer.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's more things that I can say. Deer's going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes maybe they don't, but I feel more confident in making that call.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with turkeys, I can't because every bird is so different. Like the video I dropped today, if that same scenario happened to me right now, I would think, I'm going to kill this bird. At some point today, I'm going to kill this bird. Mm-hmm. I was within freaking 40 yards
mm-hmm.
of this turkey for like 3 hours from all different. You watched it. You see how I did like a horseshoe on that ridge around him?
Yeah, you chased him all. You chased like, him all over the place.
He stayed in the same spot. I played that. I don't think I'd do anything different.
Yeah.
The only thing I would do different is on that last, about 2 hours into it,
mm-hmm.
I would have, basically, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the video, what happened is I had been on like four or five turkeys that morning, and there was one that seemed like it would be the easiest one to get to, and he didn't gobble until quite a bit later in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and I had to go down a ridge into a creek bottom. I thought he was in that creek bottom or on the opposite side of the creek mm-hmm. on a bench really close to the creek. And mm-hmm. he ended up being on that bench.
Yeah.
But I came at him from one angle, and he was probably within – I could probably call him into about 50-ish yards, 40 to 50 yards. But there was a little mm-hmm. knob that he was on the other side of, and I never could see him. But I could hear him. It was like I could hear the spit mm-hmm. in his throat when he would gobble. And yeah. it doesn't show up that well on the video mm-hmm. as far as the sound. You can't hear it that good, but you can still hear it.
Yeah.
So what I did was I was like, well, he's not coming this direction because he just wouldn't. He would gobble, mm-hmm. then he'd turn around, and I'd hear him a little bit further away. And I'm yeah. like, well, crap. So there was a drainage, or a holler, as you would call it, coming down off the side of this ridge. And I thought, he's going to go up that drainage. Mm-hmm. That's the direction he sounds like. He's just going to follow this bench, make that sharp left turn, and go up that drainage. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm going to get up on top of it, on top of the ridge, and call him from right there. So I did that, got up on top. Mm-hmm. That bird was in the same exact spot. And I probably got him within about 40 yards,
yeah.
calling him up. But he was, again, just right over the knob where I could not get a shot at him. Mm-hmm. And I never saw him. But, again, I could hear the spit in his yeah. throat when he gobbled. So I was like, okay, mm-hmm. well, if he's just going to stay there, then I'm going to go down a little bit further to at least make it sound like I'm a turkey that's moving.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, I've been on all sides of him. Mm-hmm. So I go down. And that was the closest I got to him. And the knob was a lot closer to me. If he would have put his head over it, I would have shot him.
Yeah.
But he just never did. Mm-hmm. He just never did. 30 yards probably is where he got. On that last run at it, looking back now, if I'm in that same scenario and he's not coming any closer, mm-hmm. I'm probably just going to belly crawl up to the edge of that knob to where I can maybe get a mm-hmm. shot at him. But I don't think I would have done anything different, you know,
yeah.
with my knowledge there. It was just like one of those things that was just like, I learned a lot, maybe more from that turkey hunt mm-hmm. than any turkey hunt I've ever been on. Just being that close to a gobbler for 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know?
One thing I started this a couple of years ago was keeping a journal. And it's not of every hunt that I've been on. I don't have the patience for that. I don't have the mindset for that. But just... if something interesting happened on a hunt, like it didn't have to end in a kill or anything like that, but if something weird or just what I thought was interesting happened on that hunt, I just write the hunt down, just like a short little essay of what happened.
Yeah.
And I actually got behind on it because I actually finished up the Nebraska trip just the other day, putting everything in there, but I could remember it, you know, yeah. I could remember stuff. But, I was looking back at a couple other hunts from like a couple years ago or last year or something like that, and they were hunts that didn't result in me killing a turkey. And I was looking back there and I was reading one. And I was like, dang, man, I should have done this. And I could go yeah. back and I looked at the mat where I was like, I'm an idiot. I should have done this over here. But I think it's different for you guys because you guys carry cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can film everything, you watch the film, but, I would suggest that to anybody, just yeah. keeping a journal or something to log your hunts or something every now and then.
To where you can look back at it and maybe it brings back to your memory yeah. the things that you learned.
Because
or maybe you can, there's a lot of people putting content out there.
Mm-hmm.
I found for me with any type of hunting that I do, the more that I absorb that content from people, mm-hmm. I can look back at these other scenarios and be like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I should have done there.
Yep, exactly.
Because that's, you know, you're constantly evolving. You're learning yeah. every single time you listen to a podcast or watch a video mm-hmm. of Dave's or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And so you can take those things and apply it, and it all kind of comes together. What yeah. maybe you should have done, or maybe a reason why that hunt worked,
mm-hmm.
why you were successful and you didn't really know why.
Yeah.
So I think it's all like having some way to log those memories is mm-hmm. especially important, you know.
Yeah. And just in the last couple of years that I've started hunting public land more so than I ever did, I've learned infinitely more than I ever would have, you know, hunting my farm,
yeah.
you know, down in Tennessee or in Hickman County where I grew up that I've hunted my whole life. If I just set up my decoys on the edge of a field there every season, every weekend, what am I going to learn?
Yeah.
You know, but stomping around 20,000 acres on a WMA somewhere – or going out to Nebraska, you know, or you just take in so much more. And the stuff from Nebraska, I can probably really apply to the stuff in Kansas and Oklahoma just because there's different birds, open terrain, blah, blah, blah. But just being able to gain more knowledge, that's another good reason to travel and hunt, because you just pick up stuff. I think we were talking about earlier about listening to podcasts and getting nuggets of information from this podcast and the nuggets of information from this one. It's the same thing with traveling. Yeah, there's a few things that I learned in Nebraska that I'll carry over into hunting this year, even in Tennessee, and then I'll take that some other thing and I'll take it to Oklahoma and use, and in the future I'll use something I learned this year. So as hunters, you know, we always have to be learning something.
Yeah.
And I think if we're not learning something, we're either too cocky to make ourselves learn something, or we've just gotten to a point where we don't care. So we always have to.
And some people don't want to evolve, and they want to stay doing what they're doing. That's fine, you know, if that's your priority. But
you see that a lot on social media.
Yep, definitely. All right, so we're running short on time on the podcast, but I do want to do a speed round with you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And speed round means just answer the question as simply as you can. Sometimes it might be yes or no. Sometimes it might be a one word thing. Sometimes I might say why. You know, just depending on what it is.
Okay.
But this is the one we've been starting on. What kind of gun do you use?
I shoot a Benelli, a Super Black Eagle original. And my dad got me that when I was a senior in high school. He said that was my Christmas, graduation, and my birthday present. And that was in 04, and I've had that gun ever since, and I've used it all over the country. Yeah, I'll never get rid of it, and I suggest it to anybody.
All right, are you using open sights?
Yeah, bead, just regular old bead on the front of it.
Hadn't
made it far enough in life to get a optic, get a sight from a gun yet.
Hey, that it works. If it works, I mean,
yep.
Sounds like you killed a bunch of turkeys.
I get lucky.
Using a bead. So don't fix it if it ain't broke. Yep. All right, so let's see. What kind of choke?
I use a Pure Gold, which is, I've had that choke just a little bit less than I've had the gun. That was the first choke I've ever bought, and that's the only choke I've ever bought. But it's a Pure Gold turkey choke, 0.670. It's not super tight, but I shoot, I don't know, this may be your next question. But
it is, don't say it.
Okay. But yeah, right. That's what I shoot.
All right, what loads do you use?
This year I'm using Federal TSS 3.5-inch number 9s. One thing that we didn't talk about that probably needs to be mentioned, but when you go to different states, check the shot size regulations. I think Tennessee has a regulation that you can't use shot any larger in size than number 4, so you can't use like number 2 shot or BB or anything like that.
Yeah.
But other states have a shot size minimum, in that I think Nebraska had a nothing smaller than 7.5, so you couldn't use number 9 or 10 shot or some of these, you know, really small TSS loads. But this year I'm shooting 3.5-inch TSS number 9s.
Okay.
All the pellets. Give me all the pellets.
That's what I got. I got the 3.5 number 9s from Federal.
They shoot really well with that 0.67 choke, because it's just a little more open. I don't shoot turkeys very far. You know, conventional, what's the 40-yard number that everybody throws around, that's me.
Yeah.
I don't shoot turkeys very far, but I like a lot of pellets.
Yeah.
And so even before I shot TSS, I shot number 6. 3.5-inch. So I just like a lot of pellets.
That's awesome. What were you using before?
Just
for TSF?
Yeah, just 3.5-inch number 6 shot. Just, I don't even remember. I don't think I was loyal to anything. Probably Winchester or
whatever.
Something or another.
Yeah.
Cheap co-op. You know, box of shells I could get at the co-op or Walmart.
Yep. Hey, I remember a time, this isn't part of the speed round, I remember a bird that I shot, and I totally didn't have any of the right stuff. I went to go get turkey loads, and nobody had them in the little town that I was in. And I ended up shooting at a bird with some old, old stuff that I had.
Like paper shells.
Yeah. And it hit him.
Yeah.
And I saw it. I mean, it blew feathers off of him, hit him like right underneath the neck, and that bird flew off.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I stock up. Like, I get plenty. I make sure that I'm going to go in the woods with plenty of stuff, because I've seen, you know, I know guys say you can kill them with birdshot. That's, you know, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I have. But
it's just not recommended.
It's not recommended. Yeah. That was a 30-yard shot, you know, and it just
my first turkey I killed with it was a 20 gauge Belgium Brown and A5. It was actually my mom's old shotgun and number six shot squirrel shot. I mean, I didn't even know there were turkey shells when I first started turkey hunting, but quick story. But I shot this Jake. I just built a blind at the edge of a field, waved for one, walked by, shot this Jake, and I didn't know they flopped around so much when you killed them. I thought I shot a few deer, and I shoot nearly all my deer with a rifle in front of the shoulder, in the neck, and they drop right in the tracks. I thought that's what a turkey would do, and I was mistaken. So I shot this turkey, and it starts flopping, and I'm thinking, oh, crap, this thing's about to get up and run away. So I jump out of the blind, and this thing's still flopping. I'm like, oh, no. So I just draw a bead, and I just put a line of shot right across his head, just blew his head clean off, and he just kept flopping. And I think I shot the last shell, and I didn't have any shells left, so I just sat there and watched the turkey flop. I didn't know what to do, but yeah, you can kill them with anything. It's just, you know, there's better options out there.
Definitely. All right, so are you a bottomland guy or something else?
Well, I wear a lot of First Light stuff. I got a discount, and I got a bunch of First Light stuff. So I wore my clothing is First Light, but I just got my gun dipped in a Bottomland.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm a little trashy than I like Mossy Oak. I'm a little more uppity than I like First Light. Kind of thing. No, not really.
Tax bracket.
I'm still a dirt.
All right, you like? Let's see, fried turkey nuggets or grilled turkey breast?
You can't beat fried nuggets, especially since I found out you can go to Chick-fil-A and get a tub of Chick-fil-A sauce. So that kind of so if you have Chick-fil-A catered, or they put a catering tray together, they'll give you, like, I don't know, it's like 8 ounces of their sauce, but you can get it for like $2. It's super cheap. So, yeah,
dang.
Next time you're at Chick-fil-A, you're at, here, pro tip, before turkey season, get you a bunch of Chick-fil-A sauce for your turkey nuggets.
Heck yeah.
Because that's cheap. But I like grilled breast, turkey breast, you know, like on the smoker or something, and I'll just slice it and make deli meat out of it. I like that too.
Heck yeah. All right, so are you diaphragm, pot call, box?
Diaphragm more than anything. I have a pot called, so I think it's like a crystal or glass or whatever. I do like that because it's super loud, and I carry a box call, but I hardly ever use it, and it was the first turkey call I ever got. It was a Lynch, foolproof turkey call. I use it every now and then, but just, man, the realism of a diaphragm or a pot call, it can't be beat, but diaphragm more than anything.
What's your favorite cut?
I blow mostly a ghost cut or a V cut. That's just what my mouth likes, and that's a whole nother podcast, figuring out which mouth call to use or whatever. But yeah, ghost cut, V cut, and then I have a cutter too.
Okay,
so that's what I carry.
What brand are you using? You just kind of whatever you like best.
Nah, I like Appalachian Custom Calls. It's a guy that makes them out of East Tennessee, Jonathan Shule, and they're cheap. They're like $6 a piece, and I buy new ones every year, and I just keep some in my truck, and yeah, there's nothing wrong with them. I don't know why people would pay like $14 for a mouth call. That's unreal to me. I know guys that do, not knocking anybody, you know, whatever floats your boat, but golly, man, they're just a little old diaphragm call.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose probably, I don't know how many each spring anyway.
That's true, man. You're right. You're right on that. All right. Are you a beard guy or a spur guy?
Ooh, I'd say spur more than beard. I never really got into it.
It's like
is that what everybody says?
Are you a butts or boob guy? That's kind of the same question for turkey hunter.
Yeah, butt all the way in that department, I guess. I don't know, spurs more so than beard. I just like seeing big old spurs on some. But yeah. I don't ever look at them until they get the bird down. So I'm not trophy hunting. I'm not the turkey DMA or TDMA over here, you know, trying to age my birds. But.
So let's say you got 3 gobblers that come out, they come just rolling out there.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can't really age them.
No.
Are you going to shoot the one with the longest beard, Or just the first one that gives you a shot?
Probably the first one that gives me a shot, because, man, if they come in there, you best be ready. You can't be having your tape measure out, you know, while they're standing there. You can't be thinking too much.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, it's always a bonus, you know, when you walk up on one. He's got a big old beard, and he's got long spurs, and he's heavy as crap when you first pick him up. But, you know, the good thing about turkey hunting is everything leading up to that point is why we turkey hunt.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I haven't met a turkey hunter yet that's like, man, I killed this bird, but he only had a 9-inch beard.
Yeah, it's not like, man, I thought he's a 10-point.
He only had 7-8-inch spurs. Yeah. No, I'm not like that, man. If they gobble and they put on a show and they get me fired up, man, he's good enough to ride in my truck.
Yeah. All right, wood birds or field birds?
I grew up hunting field birds, you know, on private land, and that was always fun, especially, you know, using decoys and seeing the show that they put on. But I've dipped my toe into hunting woods birds, and it's probably going to be hard to beat them woods birds, I think. I think I'm going to get hooked on it. So
yeah.
I'll go with woods birds right now.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, you're a Tennessee guy, so you kind of have a good mixture. You can kind of do whatever you feel like.
We got everything. We got all the wet. We got all kinds of weather, and we got all kinds of terrain. We got all kinds of stuff to choose from up there.
That's the thing I like about Tennessee. Like it almost feels like as soon as I cross the state line into Tennessee, just the habitat diversity just is insane.
I know the air, you just breathe fresher air, and you ain't got to worry about this Bama stuff. You know,
yeah.
The color orange just looks a lot better.
I don't know about all that. I'm indifferent on that because I don't really care. I'm from Texas, so let's see, where was I at?
Oh, no, you're talking about diversity. Yep, we got you got mountains in the east, we've got rolling hills in the middle, and you got virtually, you know, plains out in the west.
Yep.
So you got all kinds of stuff to choose from.
And I hunted a place out in West Tennessee this year for deer, and it was pretty hilly. Like you can pretty much go an hour. If you live in Nashville, you can go an hour any direction. You can have whatever you want.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool. So, what's your bucket list turkey hunt?
Man, I don't know. You know, we went to Nebraska last year, and when I got that bird, it was right then I was like, man, I totally want to get a grand slam, and I want to do it all on public land. So I think the tip top of that would be going to Florida and do an Osceola on public land. I think that's what everybody's is right now, actually. But, in the meantime, I'm building up preference points in Florida to get that Osceola because I know how hard they are. So I'm going to try and just build enough points and get a good quota hunt and just up my chances.
Yeah.
So yeah, probably the Osceola. I do want to go to Mexico and get a Goulds. I think I'm gonna have to do. I'll have to do an outfitter if I go that route. I started to build points in Arizona, but I kind of opted out of it because the time that it would take for me to build enough points to draw a Goulds or an area that had Goulds turkeys in Arizona, with that money I could go to Mexico and hunt with an outfitter. I'd probably still do self guided or something like that where you know I want to call my own birds. Right now, as many birds as I've killed, not bragging or anything, but I couldn't imagine somebody calling in a bird for me right now. It just irks me. And I think a lot of turkey hunters are like that. It just wouldn't feel right.
Yeah.
It'd just feel like, oh, I just shot a turkey. Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just me. But, Osceola in Florida and Mexican Goulds.
That'd be cool.
So.
But all of those sound awesome.
I know. Some people ask me, like, what's your favorite turkey hunt? I was like, man, whichever one's next.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. So April 4th, I'll be hunting in Tennessee, and that's going to be my favorite turkey hunt right then.
Yeah, I understand. I actually got to see some Osceolas when I was deer hunting down in Florida this year, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have this crazy infatuation almost with Florida. Like, I just like it.
It's wild.
I don't want to like it, though. Like, I don't like the weather in Florida.
Oh, no.
I don't really like the bit of the, like, but there is something about hunting in Florida and having the opportunity. Like, it's hard, dude. Mm-hmm. The deer hunting there was tough, especially when you don't have all summer to scout and all that stuff. You're just kind of going as you go.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but there was one specific day out there this year where I saw deer, I saw a black bear, and I had a group of Osceolas come through.
That's
and
crazy.
It was just a cool, just a neat little spot, you know? And
they got Panthers down there too, the Florida Panthers.
Yep.
And Gators and Pythons and Florida men and everything else.
Oh, and the hunters in Florida ain't no joke either. That's almost a whole other animal in themselves.
That's right.
But, all right. So this is the last question.
Okay.
And you may be the first person to answer this question differently.
Okay.
But you might not. I don't know.
Okay.
But I think so. Just judging by our conversations.
All right.
Will you shoot a Jake?
I will not shoot a Jake. Well, I don't know. Maybe if it's my birthday. Maybe if it's my birthday, I might shoot a Jake. Or if it's the last day of the season, you know, and I might have a tag left, then I might shoot a Jake. But other than that, you know, I will not shoot a Jake. No, I'll shoot a Jake. I would have shot one last year if I hadn't missed one. I'll shoot one. If you go out of state, you drive for 2 days, and you got a tag to burn, that Jake start looking pretty good. You get hungry, man. I ain't never gonna hit on or talk crap on anybody for shooting a Jake.
Yeah.
Do whatever makes you happy, man.
Yeah. If he's just standing there and he's asking for it.
He's just looking at me funny. No, I will not shoot a Jake.
So you're the first person so far this turkey season that has said, yes, I will shoot a Jake.
I ain't too proud to shoot a Jake.
Yep.
I mean, he's just a Jake. He's just a – especially if he comes in gobbling or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean – you either hungry or you just got your blood pumping, man.
Yep.
Go ahead. Until the biologists deem that we probably shouldn't shoot Jakes, then have at it. I don't care, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Good answer.
Thank you.
Well, dude, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Man, I loved it. It's a lot of fun doing these in-person things.
Oh, yeah.
And, I was glad I got to come out here and hang out with you. Thanks for our lunch date.
Heck yeah, dude. We, listen, those dough burgers are something special.
Dough burgers.
They're good.
I'm going to remember them.
I'm a fan.
I might look up a recipe. I might try to make one out of venison, do a venison dough burger.
You might could. I think it's a German thing, if I'm not mistaken.
They eat all kinds of stuff.
So I know, like, that menu has a lot of German stuff on it, like Jägerburger and stuff like that.
Yep.
Coleman's a pretty predominantly German history kind of place. I think the dough burger might be a German thing. I'm not positive.
Cool. If I make a dough burger out of venison, I'll shoot you a recipe.
Heck yeah, dude. I want to know all about that because I would love to have them here.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be cool, man. Well, yeah, dude. I know you got to get back to Tennessee here pretty quick, but... Yep. Man, thanks for driving out and hanging out and eating burgers and talking turkeys.
That's you get all my favorite things right there.
Yeah. What we need to do is we need to plan on doing another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be in Tennessee in May. We need to plan to do a podcast live and in person in the turkey woods.
Hey, that sounds awesome. So just holler at me. Wherever you at, I'll come find you.
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks so much, Joey, for coming on the show. Again, guys. If you're going to be out in the woods this weekend, stay safe. Try not to be in large groups of people. I know you don't want to hear it on a podcast, but I do want to recommend that you guys just stay safe. Be smart. We got quite a bit of turkey season left, and I think it's going to be a good one. I'm really excited about the remainder of this season. That's going to be all for today. Make sure you check us out on Facebook at Southern Ground Hunting, on Instagram, all lowercase, all one word, at Southern Ground Hunting, and on YouTube on the Sportsman's Nation channel on YouTube. Check out those videos. I've already posted a couple of turkey hunting videos that I didn't get to post from last season. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, there's a brand new one with a bird that I'm going to try to kill tomorrow. So... If you're listening to this when it comes out, there may be a slight chance that there's going to be a new video up. That's on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. That's all I got for you guys today. If you're going to be out in the woods, remember that God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.